region agreed to stop fighting one day after Baku launched a military operation there.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mews. Thanks for joining us.
Iran's leader says the West, including the U.S., was seeking the collapse of the Islamic Republic by backing the former Iraqi dictator during his war on the Iranian nation. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said all world powers assisted Saddam Hussein to wage the war. He said that France and Germany had provided Saddam with the most advanced weapons. The leader underlined that certain Arab states also helped the former Iraqi regime with financial aid and logistics. He said Iranian families sacrificed their sons and daughters to defend their beloved country. But the leader added that the war made Iran stronger as the country succeeded in promoting the culture of resistance. He noted that Iran's active presence in West Asia has been frightening the U.S., its allies, and puppets. Ayatollah Khamenei was addressing a group of veterans and activists of the Iran-Iraq War and resistance ahead of the Sacred Defense Week. Iran's president has delivered his speech at the 78th session of the U.N. General Assembly. Ibrahim Raisi says that a new world order is taking shape across the globe, which will remain irreversible.
We are at a determining juncture, a historic juncture. Today, the world is moving towards an emerging world, and this trend, this path, is not reversible. The aging liberal order, which serves the interests of domineering powers, which used to serve their interests, it does not exist anymore. And in one word, the project to Americanize the world has failed. The Iranian nation
is... Raisi said the world will not accept the Western hegemony any longer. The Iranian president said some Western powers have the Cold War mentality, fan the flames of conflict, and seek to undermine the well-being of other nations. He said that Iran has played a key role in foiling the plots of hegemonic powers. Raisi further said the presence of foreign forces in West Asia creates insecurity. He described the Israeli regime as the main source of instability and insecurity in the region. The president also hailed anti-terror efforts of the late Iranian commander, General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. drone strike in Iraq in January 2020.
The security today for some countries in our region, they owe their security to the struggles by martyr Soleimani. And if it hadn't been for the bravery of Lieutenant General Soleimani, he was a hero of fighting terrorism. If it hadn't been for his struggles, many regions would have burned in the fire set by the Daesh terrorist group.
Raisi said that Iran will use all the capacities at its disposal to bring to justice those who were involved in General Soleimani's assassination. He also blamed Western countries for using terrorism as a tool to advance their foreign policy goals. Raisi said some European countries have become a safe haven for anti-Tehran terror groups like the MKO, which has killed more than 17,000 Iranians. He also condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran and Islamophobia in Europe. The Iranian president also stressed that Iran will not give up its right to use peaceful nuclear technology.
Nuclear weapons have no place in Iran's defense doctrine. Official reports by relevant international authorities as well as Western intelligence agencies, they have time and again actually confirmed this claim, the authenticity of this claim. Iran, over the past two decades, has never ever given up its right to use and will never give up its right to use nuclear technology for peaceful purposes.
The Iranian president played down the impact of U.S. sanctions on the country's progress, highlighting the failure of the maximum pressure campaign launched by the former U.S. administration against Tehran. Raisi also warned Europe will be a loser if it opts for the path of confrontation in dealing with the Islamic Republic over its nuclear case. John Ross is a senior fellow at Chongyang Institute, Renmin University of China. He argues that the Western hegemony is on the decline, even in terms of the economy as a new world order is emerging.
Two processes which are taking place. One of which is, as regards its weight within the world economy, the United States has been in decline for, in real terms, for, you know, 50 years, and that's not going to, hasn't changed. Even the IMF, which is, can't be accused of being anti-US, projects that the main driving forces of the global economy in the next period will be in the global south. The dangers of, in the situation, however, is, as I said, the United States will try to reverse this by military means, and also it's carrying out various sanctions, technology boycotts and other things of that type. Therefore, when looked at the two de-dollarization, there's two real processes. One is it's becoming increasingly urgent for a large number of countries to find a way of getting round the various sanctions carried out by the US on the dollar. And that's why you've seen all sorts of things on this. Iran is getting able to get around these sanctions. Argentina recently took a loan from China in RMB in order to avoid having to use the dollar, etc. The second is the question of and that is very, very important. The question of general de-dollarization, I would like to say that that's going to happen, but I don't think it's going to happen in the short term. But an increasing range of countries are going to be will find ways to get around the U.S. sanctions.
Iran's defense minister says Tehran and Moscow have seen an unprecedented expansion in their defense and security ties over the past decade. Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani said that cooperation between the two countries will lead to peace and stability in the international arena. Ashtiani also pointed out significant changes in the world order. The top defense official made the remarks during a meeting with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Shoigu. For his part, the Russian defense chief noted that Moscow-Tehran cooperation is reaching new highs despite sanctions. He also stated Russia's preparation to take further joint steps to strengthen stability and security in West Asia. Shoigu arrived in the Iranian capital earlier on Tuesday for talks with senior Iranian officials. The prisoner swap deal between the U.S. and Iran has taken place. Five prisoners from each country has been freed. That is the only common denominator when it comes to this release. While Iran has found it to be its duty to defend the rights of its citizens on humanitarian grounds, the U.S. has blasted Iran as being a bad actor. An emotional reunion. Two of the five Iranians illegally detained by the U.S. have returned to the Islamic Republic, their homeland, reunited with their family. The crime? Conducting business, which the U.S. claimed had violated U.S. sanctions. Meanwhile, the five prisoners held in Iranian jails have also been freed. Their crime, far more serious than just conducting business. They were charged with spying. The Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi and his team conducted very difficult behind-the-scenes talks, an arduous task since Iran and the U.S. cannot negotiate directly. Thanks to mediators in Qatar and in Oman, the release has taken place. This was deemed as a great accomplishment for the Raisi administration on humanitarian grounds. The Iranian president has promised that it would safeguard Iranians' rights and fight for Iran's rights at any cost. Incredible double standards are at play in the way Western media covered this story. It seems like the media forgot that the U.S. had imprisoned Iranians, illegally at that, in their prisons, emotionally covering the released prisoners from Iran, while condemning Iran and its officials. Not even scant coverage of the prisoners of the bereaved families on the Iranian side. One of the prisoners held by Iran on spying charges, Siamak Namazi, was a businessman held since 2015. He thanked the U.S. President Joe Biden for ultimately putting the lives of American citizens above politics, as if the Iranian president had not done that. But the politics Namazi is talking about is out of U.S.'s own doing. The sanctions-obsessed U.S. uses its sanctions policy to twist the arm of nations into following its foreign policy line. Even on the day of the prisoner release, U.S. sanctioned the former president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He was Iran's president 10 years ago. Additionally, the U.S. sanctioned Iran's intelligence ministry. And just days before that, it had sanctioned 29 individuals and entities in connection with what it claimed was violent suppression of nationwide protest, including Press TV.
In the case of Siamak Namazi, he was sentenced to 10 years in prison for espionage and cooperation with the U.S. government and foreign intelligence networks. His company, Atiyeh Bahar Consulting in Tehran, was associated covertly, acting with the U.S. government's companies anti-Iranian in nature, like the VOA TV channel, the U.S. government's Institute for National Strategic Studies, INSS, at the Pentagon's National Defense University, and the Office of Iranian Affairs at the U.S. State Department.
There is a stark contrast to how Iran views diplomacy as opposed to the U.S. Putting aside the vast mistrust between the two, Iran respects the sovereignty of other countries. While the U.S. jails Iranians because of alleged circumvention of illegal U.S. sanctions, Iran justifiably jails people suspected of spying and collaborating with foreign governments like the U.S.
The Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi is in New York for the yearly UN General Assembly meeting. His spokesman said the message of Iranian President to the world is, quote, peace, justice, confronting discrimination and domination, unilateralism and terrorism, and the West supporting terrorist groups, the main messages of the Iranian nation. True to his word, since he came to power, the Iranian president has fast-tracked Iran's relations with a host of nations, extending his hand of friendship and peace to leaders from Latin America to Africa to West Asia and to the East with Asian countries. Yet the U.S. has described this government as what it calls a rogue terrorist regime. Question is, has Iran done anything to fit that description? Does Iran go and confiscate the earnings of another nation, forcing the country that has those funds to hold it hostage? Or does Iran go and confiscate another country's oil tanker at sea, which in essence is a form of piracy? In this case, the U.S. reason? It was a sanctions enforcement operation. These types of sanction-driven acts, however, have come back to haunt the U.S., along with its allies, like its European partners. Countries have realized that it is not Iran that has rogue elements, but the U.S. The sanctions regime, the weaponization of the dollar, and its foreign policy agenda has left the U.S. isolated on the international stage. Organizations like BRICS and the SCO are testament to that. Countries are rejecting the U.S. approach and are aligning themselves with each other. Some of the U.S. and Western media are accusing Iran of executing a hostage and ransom act. This line doesn't have many buyers, especially when it comes to the topic of prisoners. A country that has the most number of prisoners inside its jails cannot accuse another country like Iran of being rogue, never mind the illegal torture that takes place there. The U.S. also has no credibility when it supports a regime like Israel, which detains and jails people without charge or trial, almost on a daily basis. This is while Iran, inside the country, has pardoned thousands of prisoners on a yearly basis based on Iran's leader discretion and approval. So the Western hostage and ransom narratives against Iran doesn't hold ground. Western pundits and so-called rights groups fail to mention Iranians languishing in U.S. prisons. They accuse Iran of falsifying charges against prisoners, like spying charges. Maybe the U.S. needs to be reminded how it was spying on Iran on a massive scale during the time it had an embassy in Iran. But the U.S. doesn't learn its lessons and continues down a path of failed maximum pressure campaign, a failure admitted by U.S. officials. This is why Iran will continue down its path of imprisoning anyone suspected of spying and acting against Iran's national security, as it has done countless number of times.
Azerbaijan's defense ministry has confirmed a ceasefire with ethnic Armenian forces in the Nagorno-Karabakh. This is a day after Baku launched a military operation in the disputed region.
An agreement was reached on the suspension of local anti-terrorist measures. The units of the Armenian armed forces located in the Karabakh region of the Republic of Azerbaijan. The illegal Armenian armed groups lay down their weapons, leave their combat positions and military posts, and are completely disarmed. Units of the Armenian armed forces leave the territories of Azerbaijan. Illegal Armenian armed groups are released.
Baku had already announced reaching a truce brokered by Russian peacekeepers. The warring sides have agreed to hold talks on reintegrating the breakaway territory into the rest of Azerbaijan on Thursday. In the meantime, the Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan says that Yerevan was not aware of and involved in preparing the text of the ceasefire deal. More than 30 people were killed and over 200 wounded in less than 24 hours of what Azerbaijan called anti-terrorist measures. The Nagorno-Karabakh region is populated mainly by Armenians, but it is an internationally recognized part of Azerbaijan. The latest flare-up came 3 years after Azerbaijan recaptured large parts of the contested territory in a 2020 war that left some 7,000 people dead. Political analyst Rodney Martin believes the U.S. and British spy agencies are involved in the latest tensions between Azerbaijan and Armenia over the Nagorno-Karabakh region.
Well, I'm a little suspicious. If there's no weapons or bombs or mines or armaments in the area, then how, where do these explosions come from? I do find the timing of this terrorism to be somewhat suspect, given the West's desire to create as much trouble for Russia as possible, and could be using pawns, or need I say, I kind of smell the handprints of CIA or British MI6 here, trying to cause a regional conflict to try to divide Russia's relationships, which they have very good relations with both countries. So I'm suspicious of this. I don't buy the concept that there's no military targets or there's no armaments in the area, because obviously they are.
Britain's National Health Service is facing chaos as consultants and junior doctors stage a strike together for the first time. Senior doctors, known as consultants, began a two-day strike on Tuesday over an ongoing pay dispute. Their junior colleagues have now joined the industrial action and would walk off the job until Friday. Consultants demand about a 12% pay hike this year, double the amount the government had offered. The industrial action seriously disrupts services, with thousands of appointments and operations being canceled and rescheduled. The government said that it was considering forcing some healthcare staff to work in hospitals during the strike. The doctors are due to hold 3 days of joint strike action next month. Britain has been rocked by months of nationwide strikes, with government employees in all sectors demanding higher wages in line with rising inflation.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Leader meets with people of Sistan, Baluchistan and southern Khorasan provinces. On Monday, 11th of September 2023, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a gathering of people from Sistan Baluchistan province in southeastern Iran and southern Khorasan province in eastern Iran. The leader referred to the anti-Pahlavi regime struggles of the peoples of these provinces going back 60 years or more, and the fact that his own struggle against the Pahlavi regime started from this very same region. The leader added, "The peoples and top religious authorities of this region supported my struggle against the Pahlavi regime." He pointedly added, "The reason I refer to these past events is not so much to recount history, rather I want to rectify a false picture of this region of the country, which has been propagated by the enemies of the Islamic Republic of Iran." He poignantly added, "Declaring the truth will shine light on public perception and public opinion in various regions of the country." In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. One of the main points of the leader's speech at this meeting was to warn the general public and officials to be vigilant and alert vis-à-vis major changes occurring in the world today. Referring to some historical events such as colonialism and imperialism, which reached its peak in the 18th century, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "When the colonialist movement started in Europe for various reasons, countries should have been awake and alert. The leaders of these countries should have been vigilant. But this was not the case, and we all know what happened. Many countries in this region and beyond struggled against colonialism for two or three centuries or even longer." In his remarks, the leader said, "Today a major change is occurring in the world. This has already happened, or it is about to happen. Today, the countries of this region must be aware and alert. We mustn't be caught sleeping. We mustn't fall into the same trap as we did in the colonialist era, or following the First World War. We must be wide awake and vigilant." Explaining further, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "There are several signs of this major change. First and foremost among them is the weakening of the colonialist arrogant powers. This is a sign of the change which is happening. America's power is waning and it will weaken further. The same is true about a number of European countries. Their power is also waning. Another sign of this change is the emergence of a new world or regional powers. New countries are emerging, which are either world powers or regional superpowers, a sign of the new world order." Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "This is not just a slogan, this is reality. Even the Americans themselves admit it. The indices which used to point to America's supremacy in the world are all down and sliding even further. Among the most important of these indices was America's economy, which used to be very strong, but it is now waning. Another important point was America's ability to interfere in the domestic affairs of other countries and bring about regime change. But today, America is much more limited in what it can do." Commenting on America's ability to bring about regime change, the leader said, "If America wants to destroy a country, its options are much more limited today. If they dislike a government and want regime change, their only option is to start a multi-pronged, combined media, military, economic sanctions war against that country, an option which is very costly for the Americans. And in the end, there is no guarantee that this combined warfare will actually succeed. America has some of the most advanced and sophisticated military hardware and intelligence tools at its disposal. But in the past 10 years, how many of these multi-pronged combined war efforts have actually succeeded in bringing down a government and replacing it by a US-friendly regime? For over 10 years, the Americans tried this out in Syria, but in the end, they failed miserably. For over 20 years, they tried this strategy in Afghanistan, but in the end, their ignominious military withdrawal was a debacle for all to see. Thus, when we say America's power is waning, that is what we mean." Turning to Europe, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei pointedly said, "Europe's power is also waning. News from Africa confirms this. Governments backed by France and former French colonies in Africa are falling one by one. With popular uprisings, popular revolutions and military coup d'etats removing leaders who take their orders directly from Paris. Western powers are fading and becoming weaker every day. Turning to U.S. machinations and plots in West Asia region, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "When we say the power of the enemies is waning, it does not mean, of course, the enemies cannot plot and scheme against us. They certainly can. They are busy plotting now, but we must remain vigilant. The Americans have plotted for the entire region, not just the Islamic Republic of Iran. They have plots and schemes for Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Afghanistan, and all the countries of the Persian Gulf, many of whom are America's traditional allies. Our information and intelligence tells us that the Americans have set up a crisis group to push their policies within this region further." Elaborating further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The mission of this group is to create crises and turmoil. Their job is to identify what causes a crisis and to agitate and cause a crisis. They have thought and studied carefully and have identified several weak points which can be agitated into a crisis. Within the Islamic Republic, they are concentrating on ethnic differences, on religious differences, and the issue of women, agitating and causing crises. They want to deliver a hard blow to our dear nation through such crises." The leader added, "They want to create a situation like that of Syria or Yemen in the Islamic Republic of Iran. But they cannot, of course. There is no doubt. We, all of us, should be vigilant and alert. We must know the ways of the enemies, and we must confront the enemy." In further remarks, the leader pointed to two fundamental issues of national unity and national security. The leader said, "The enemies of the Islamic Republic are targeting our national security and our national unity. This is a fundamental issue. Where our national interests are at stake, we must put aside all our religious differences, political differences, and ethnic differences. We must unite together, because it is our national interests which are at stake." The leader emphasized, "Thank God, our nation is a vigilant nation, and it is well awake." He said, "I know very well, and I see the signs that this nation is well awake and alert. The experience of the past 40-odd years confirmed this. And I say this genuinely. The Iranian nation is awake and is well aware of the plots of the enemies." In final remarks, the leader said, "The enemy is seriously plotting against this country. And naturally, we must also be serious in our reply to the enemy."
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone,
Dear brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran, and we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum wal'an alahum ajma'in. Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing the concept of sincerity when we were talking about the third constituent in supplications. The third constituent was God. And we said, regarding this, we have to note some important things. The first point was sincerity. We said that prior to anything else, the supplicant has to recognize whom he is bringing his requests and needs to. This is the absolute cause. And knowing the Almighty Allah as the absolute cause is nothing other than sincerity. When we know that He is the absolute cause, when we know that all other creatures are nothing in comparison with Him, when we realize that our other creatures are effective based on the establishment by God, when we understand that all other creatures other than the Almighty Allah, they are intermediary means established by God, this is the time that we will present our supplications, present our worshipings only to the Almighty Allah and no one else. This is the time when anything and anyone else except the Almighty Allah is driven out of our minds, when we are focusing for our supplications and our worshipments. Of course, we should note that Almighty Allah is the one that sometimes awakens our natures. In deep inside ourselves, all the human beings, we are all familiar with the Almighty Allah. But sometimes we are awakened by Him Himself. That is why Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Araftullah, I recognized God, but how? بِفَسْخِ الْعَزَائِمِ وَنَقْضِ الْهِمَمِ. I recognize God, but through revoking the determinations and breaking the intentions." This means when Imam Ali alayhi salam determined, he was sometimes prevented from achieving his own determination. When he intended to do something, this is the time when fate contradicted his intention. And that's how Imam Ali alayhi salam realized. He realized that أَنَّ الْمُدَبِّرَ غَيْرِ. He realized that the administrator, the absolute cause, is not him. He is only acting as an intermediary. So Imam Ali alayhi salam is teaching us that there are many and actually numerous unrecognized agents in the universe that we are unaware of.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil jawab anjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo kashti ab anjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju tishnagi avar bedast. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad ab az bala va ast. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the merciful God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah. Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Of course, dear listeners, when we talk about sincerity in supplication and recognizing the Almighty Allah, as Imam Ali alayhi salam says, recognizing God, بِفَسْخِ الْعَزَائِمِ وَنَقْضِ الْهِمَمِ, it should be noted that Allah has put the world of causes in contrast with the world of effects in such a way that each one modifies the other. I mean, in order to elaborate on this, we can refer to this verse of the Holy Quran. It says, وَالسَّابِحَاتِ سَبْحًا فَالسَّابِقَاتِ سَبْقًا فَالْمُدَبِّرَاتِ أَمْرًا. I swear by those who float in space, then those who are foremost going ahead, then those who regulate the affair. These verses, dear listeners, are interpreted to mean that those angels who speed up and excel the others are the true managers, and they will dominate the others. It is frequently observed that there is an indestructible, imperishable, or absolute cause at work which, if being asked, will answer our needs. This absolute cause does not falter. Its effect is inevitable. If you are from among those who have recognized this only for a small time, only for once, this is the absolute cause we're talking about in sincerity. The human nature has recognized this absolute cause and has known that it is always at work. And this is what the common sense too will accept. But sometimes our imaginations force us to somehow adopt the pseudo-cause for the real cause. And we like our wishes to come true through these unrealistic means and imaginations. Such cases are usually void of common sense, and the innate intelligence has rejected them. Here, the imaginative factors have led the way, and it often happens that our inner being asks God for something, but our imagination asks for something else. And this is like the sick person whose inner being asks for health and wishes for medicine, but his imaginative system forces him to escape from taking the medicine. We have explained this prior to this, so I think we are done with this part of our discussion. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Economists have forecasted that UK retail savers will keep pulling funds out of investment funds this year as British householders struggle with inflation and rising mortgage costs. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Financial Times has covered this story and tells us more. Deposits at the UK's four biggest banks have fallen by close to £80 billion over the past year as retail and corporate customers look for better interest rates, households grapple with higher costs and mortgage holders pay off loans early. According to an analysis of corporate filings by the British Daily, NatWest, Lloyds Bank, HSBC and Barclays experienced total outflows of about £78 billion in the 12 months to June 2023. That is the largest drop over four quarters since June of 2018, the most recent year for which data is available for all of the lenders. While the Big Four still hold close to £240 billion, more in deposits than they did in 2019, rival lenders' offer of higher interest rates is forcing them to improve their own deals. Benjamin Toms, analyst at RBC Capital Markets, said retail customers are migrating from current accounts at the large incumbent banks into savings or fixed-term deposits at some smaller peers. while the significant driver in the corporate space is the search for yield from corporate treasury departments. Benjamin Tong said smaller companies would also have repaid government-backed loans issued during the pandemic that had sat unused in their accounts. Tong added, retail customers have also been using surplus deposits to pay down debt, including both mortgages and credit cards, and generally manage their expenses as a result of a higher cost of living. Deposits began rising in the final quarter of 2019, jumping by nearly £80 billion in the second quarter of 2020 as pandemic curbs hit spending. They peaked at more than £1.5 trillion in second quarter of 2022. National Westminster Bank's major drop in the first quarter was partially due to technical reasons as it exited the Irish market. While smaller lenders benefited from the surge, deposits at the Big Four rose by 20% in the 4 years to June, almost twice the average of Santander, Virgin Money UK, Metro Bank and TSB. Holding larger deposits in a period of rising interest rates boosts banks' net interest margins, the difference between what they offer depositors and what they charge for loans. Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. With UK interest rates at a 15-year high of 5.25%, lenders have come under mounting pressure over their speed in passing on the benefits of higher interest rates to savers. The House of Commons Treasury Select Committee recently accused the Big Four banks of blatant profiteering by squeezing higher profits from their loyal savings customers, while the Financial Conduct Authority set a deadline for banks to justify low interest rates or face penalties. The Financial Conduct Authority, FCA, and the data watchdog also told lenders in July that they could communicate better saving rates to customers and follow data protection rules after banks raised concerns over compliance. High Street banks have responded by improving rates on instant access accounts, which now range from 1 to 1.75% compared with 0.7% to 1.35% a month ago. But they still lag rivals such as JP Morgan's Chase UK, which plans to increase its instant access savings rate to 4.1% in a few days' time. One senior executive at a smaller bank said that while rising living costs had contributed to the roughly £78 billion outflow, it had largely been driven by consumers withdrawing money to repay mortgages early in order to defray potential costs from higher rates. He said, "I think some people are saying, my mortgage is getting a bit expensive, but I've got all this cash in my bank, so they'll repay some or all of it depending on how much money they have." Bank of England data published recently showed that the effective interest rate, the actual interest rate paid on outstanding mortgages, increased by 0.1 percentage point in June to 2.92%. The average two-year tracker rate is now at 6.18%. The central bank also found that households withdrew a net £8.4 billion from instant access site accounts offering interest in June, while they put a net £6.6 billion into more competitive longer-term fixed-rate products, which are more costly to banks as the margin is smaller. Katie Murray, National Westminster Bank's chief financial officer, said at the bank's half-year results in July that a greater move to interest-bearing assets and competition in mortgages was behind its cut to its net interest margin guidance. The Bloomberg news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Economists forecasted that UK retail savers will keep pulling funds out of investment funds this year as householders struggle with inflation and rising mortgage costs. Data from the Investment Association, a trade body, showed that in June, retail investors pulled some £986 million from equity and fixed income funds. This represented the first net outflow by retail investors since December of last year. As rising interest rates drove growing interest in fixed income, investors focused strongly on UK government bonds, with overall net flows into gilt funds in June at £504 million, compared with a net inflow of just £126 million across all bond funds, including gilts. Cuthbert Hopkinson, a portfolio manager at Waverton Investment Management, said, "We have had a few clients take money out of their portfolios to pay off mortgages." He said people were concerned about rising costs, but higher interest rates were starting to push down inflation. High rates and the risk of a slowdown in Britain's economy this year have weighed on retail investors as they deal with the trickiest market conditions in more than a decade. The Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee recently raised interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point to 5.25% in a sign that central bankers remained wary of stubbornly high inflation, despite price increases falling more than expected to 7.9% in June. However, interest rates nearing expected peaks will offer little reprieve to mortgage holders scheduled to renew at levels far higher than experienced in the past decade. According to data provider MoneyFacts, the average five-year fixed mortgage reached 6.37% ahead of recent interest rate hike. Rachel Winter, a partner at wealth manager Killick & Co., said, "It's about making a logical decision. If you're paying 6 or 7% on a mortgage, it's better to pay that off because you can't get that return on an investment at the moment." Cuthbert Hopkinson said that the deposit saving rates were also a draw for investors, as well as short-term gilts and corporate bonds. But he argued equities remained a more effective long-term hedge against inflation.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's leader says the West, including the U.S., sought to topple the Islamic Republic by backing the former Iraqi dictator during his war against Iran. Addressing the U.N. General Assembly, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran and Islamophobia in Europe. And Azerbaijan and ethnic Armenians in the Nagorno-Karabakh region agreed to stop fighting one day after Baku launched a military operation there.
Well, welcome to the studio. So the